Welcome to the Village, everybody. My name's Eric Siepen. I'm a pastor at the Village. Tonight we are in Ruth chapter 3. If you're looking for Ruth and you don't have a Bible, Ruth is on page, I believe, 146. Let me check here. Make sure that's true. Page 146. It's not true. Sorry about that. Ruth is actually on 196. Anyway, we are in Ruth chapter 3. So let me get you up to date. As it said on the website, and as well, I've been talking about Ruth, is that Ruth is just an Old Testament chick flick. It is the ultimate chick flick of the Old Testament. It has all the hooks that a good chick flick has. So let me just bring you up to date. First off, to give you some sense of visual for it, what I've done with Ruth is I made a casting call, and I called up some agents, and I've got three actors and actresses to cover the three main parts: the part of Boaz, the part of Ruth, and the part of Naomi. Ruth is Penelope Cruz. Penelope Cruz has agreed to be Ruth. Brad Pitt has agreed to be Boaz, and Susan Sarandon has agreed to be Naomi. So let me just catch you up to where we're at right now. There was this man named Elimelech, and Elimelech was married to Naomi, and he lived in Bethlehem, and he had two sons, and those two sons' names translated into English simply are sickly and more sickly, basically. Or as I like to call them, dead and almost dead. Names you shouldn't use to call your children. So don't tell your child, well, your name means sickly, it's biblical. Right? You know, don't do that. Not a good idea. Anyway, somehow Elimelech was inspired by these names. Elimelech is a man who has some land. He's living in Bethlehem, but there's a famine. So he decides, out of his brilliance, to go to Moab. Now, Moab is just, imagine, the most decadent place you can think of, and that's Moab. And Moab's religion and the Moabite people is based around sacrifice of children and around sexuality, and they trade gods, and they... There's not a lot of consistency that's good, and so this little Hebrew family is probably the only family that's a worshiper of God, the one God who says none of the gods you have count, this is the only God. And so they move to these two sons, Elimelech and Naomi, move to Moab, and these two sons get married. They marry this woman named Ruth, and they marry this other woman named Oprah, or and so after they're married, these two young men, sickly and almost sickly, they die. Elimelech dies, and we have Naomi, and we have Ruth, and the other daughter-in-law are all by themselves. And so Naomi says, this isn't good, I'm going home to Bethlehem. So she starts to head off to Bethlehem, and Ruth follows her, and even though Naomi says, hey, I'm not going to give you any husbands, there's not going to be a chance for kids, you're not going to have any opportunity, we find out in chapter 1, verse 12, that Ruth says, well, no, your people are going to be my people, your God is going to be my God, I'm going to take on what you have. So something happened in those 10 years that Naomi and Elimelech and those two young men, that family, that convinced Ruth. She experienced something of God so powerful that she was willing to abandon everything to make it to follow Naomi. And so we have Naomi, who goes with a full family to Moab and returns with nothing, but she returns not with nothing, but with Ruth, a foreign convert. And Ruth, we will see, becomes the blessing of Naomi. And so when Naomi gets to Bethlehem, all of her friends say, "Hey, how you doing?" And Naomi says, "You know what? Don't call me Naomi. Don't call me Sweetness. Don't call me anything good, basically. Call me Mara. Call me Bitter and Bitterness." Call me Bitterness. So what we have in the opening of chapter 2 is bitter mother-in-law Naomi and Ruth sitting next to her, and the small piece of land that's probably left from whatever Elimelech had to sell to move over to get them to Moab to pay for the expenses of that. They're sitting in their little lean-to, and because Naomi, because Ruth, I mean, is an industrious woman, and because Naomi, and because Ruth is a woman of action, and Ruth is a woman that seems to believe that God loves her, and when she acts, God will act alongside her, and she's wise, and she says somehow she knows that there's this thing called gleaning. She knows that in the Hebrew world there are fields, and there are, and around those fields the harvesters leave space for the poor to glean. So she says, "I'm hungry, you're hungry, I'm going to go glean in the fields." She goes to glean in the fields. Gleaning means she's just collecting whatever's left over, basically. She's worked hard all day, and this is the moment when Boaz comes in. He comes in. Boaz, now we know Boaz's name means strong, but it also means celebrity. Basically, it means man with everything. He's strong, he's a fighter, he's gentle, he's good. And we have, chapter 2 is the musical chapter. It's a chapter that feels and sounds like an American musical, like a theatric play. We have Ruth playing, I mean, working in the fields. She's done. She's sitting there. She's tired. Boaz shows up. He blesses his people with a loud prayer, and they bless him back, and sort of in a song. And in the middle of that song, things go slow-mo. He looks over. He says, sees Ruth. Their eyes lock for a moment. We know that this is the main part of the story, this love story that's about to happen. And this guy says, Boaz says to his worker, whose woman is that, basically? Who does that woman belong to? And basically, he arranges things for her, and he goes over and he says, "Look, don't go on over to Ishmael's field, because that's too dangerous. You stay in my field. You know, the grain is better. Everything's good here. I've told the young men if they touch you, I'm going to beat the heck out of them. I'll kill them all. And the young girls are going to take care of you. And oh, by the way, don't drink out of the women's water. Go drink out of the men's water. I've arranged everything for you." It's a great, the beginning of their love. Then the next scene that Rod talked about last week in his really good sermon about what it means to be thankful, as we look at Ruth's thankfulness and her stance towards Boaz and her response to the gift that God is giving to her through Boaz, we have this first date that happens, and we've got Ruth just scarfing down food so much so that she gets doggy bags. I loved that, a doggy bag. I remember on my first date with my wife, we went to an Italian food restaurant. It's not even open anymore. And they were those restaurants that do your leftovers in a little swan. But my wife didn't eat like Ruth, because most likely my wife wasn't starving, or she was just nervous. Ruth was starving. So she still had a doggy bag, and it was shaped like a swan, just much bigger than Susan's. But anyway, they have their first date. And not only that, he gives her a temp job. Basically, till the end of harvest, she can work in his fields, and he'll take care of her. And that's all really good. So that's where we end up in chapter 3. Now, things to remember as we go in, there's a couple things. One is that these two women, as we listen to the story, we have to remember, are in a very, very desperate situation. They have no sons, they have no husbands, and there is no fathers looking after them. They are two young women, or one older woman and a younger woman, 3,000 years ago, putting them in a very vulnerable spot. As I talk to young women in this community, I hear over and over again that in our culture, more and more, Women are not protected. Women have been abused. Women have been taken advantage of. Women have not been protected by their father. So you should be able at some level to identify with Ruth and with Ruth's condition and with where Ruth is and with where Naomi is. You should be able to understand this. The other thing we need to remember, and it's important, is that Ruth is a woman of action. And Ruth is a woman of faith. Ruth followed Naomi all the way across her land to Bethlehem, gave up her people and her gods for God. She is a woman who truly believes in the way of the Hebrew people. And she is a woman of faith. And so here, let me just start. It says, chapter 3, one day Naomi, her mother-in-law, and her, my daughter, said to her, "My daughter, should I not try to find a home for you where you will be well provided for?" Well, a couple things. First thing is, when a mother-in-law asks a hypothetical question like, "Well, if I'm staying here at the house for the week, shouldn't I clean out all your cupboards and organize things?" Like when mother-in-laws ask hypothetical questions, they have a plan. Trust me, they've got a plan. Not only that, there's a need for a plan because harvest is almost over. It's in the time of winnowing. Winnowing is when you throw up the wheat and the chaff blows away and the wheat falls to the floor and you collect it up. It's the time of selling. It's the time of wealth where you end up making your money out of things. Anyway, it's the end of the harvest, and that probably means that Naomi and Ruth are going to be in a place where they're not provided for anymore. Or at least it feels or looks that way. And so they're in a desperate situation. And so Naomi has a plan. She says, "Is not Boaz, with whose servant girl you have been, a kinsman of ours?" Okay, well, it's important, this kinsman. Rod talked about this idea of the kinsman redeemer. And what, let me just read to you in chapter 2, verse 20, I believe, what Naomi says about Boaz. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "The man is our close relative. He is our kinsman redeemer." Now, kinsman redeemer, and let me just give you examples of why this is important. Say, for example, if Jeff, killed me, then my next of kin, which would be my brother Joel, would have to go into his closet, whip out his kinsman redeemer superhero outfit, and go avenge me by killing Jeff. That's just how it works. Well, he's not really avenging me, I suppose. He's avenging my wife who's lost a husband. But that's just part one. Then part two is that Joel, my brother, imagine him in his superhero outfit, pretty funny. Anyway, Joel, my brother, would need to marry my wife. Now, if he's already married, then that would pass on to my younger brother, Wes. And if Wes is already married, then Wes and Joel's responsibility is to find a wife or a husband for my wife. And then that firstborn child will have my name. Lastly, and Naomi has this in mind, a kinsman redeemer is someone who will buy the land of a person to reestablish them. So let me explain to you how this works, and at least how I see it working or understanding in the Hebrew world, is that if I have a piece of land and things are not going well for me, I can sell that land, and the hope is that I will sell it to my kinsman redeemer. If he can't afford it, then someone else may buy that land. But when that person buys that land, there is an assumption that that land will be purchased back by me or someone else who's a relative of me to reestablish the land that I own. So the kinsman's redeemer's job is not only to avenge people who are wrongly killed, to make sure the widows are taken care of and the line of my relative is passed on, but also is to purchase and keep land in the family, and if you can't keep it in the family, to repurchase it and put it back into the family. The land belongs to families. And so this is what kinsmen redeemers do, is they keep that land in the family. And that's the way it works. So this is the thing that Boaz supposedly is for Naomi and possibly Ruth. So this is the plan that Naomi has for Ruth. Tonight, he will be winnowing, speaking of Boaz, barley on the threshing floor. That was important. The owner of the fields was always present when the winnowing happened because he wanted to make sure that everything was safe and that he wasn't being taken advantage of. So he's going to be on the floor. This is what I want you to do. Wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes. Okay? This is not looking good. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do. Okay. First off, this sounds like a crazy mother-in-law plan. This is what basically she's saying. She's saying, all right, this is what I want you to do. I want you to put on the passion of the Hebrew or the passion of the Moabite woman or whatever. Put that perfume on. I want you to go in and get your red dress on. I want you to get clean. And I just want to pause here and tell you, those of you who have been to my weddings, I talk a lot out of Song of Solomon about men smelling good because it's important to women because women have a heightened sense of smell. Men, you got to smell good. Well, let me tell you, looking good and smelling good as a woman is also biblical. It's right there. It's most men's life verse right here, right? Anyway, it's biblical to smell good, to wash, to look good. So, anyway, all that said, what she's going to do is dress up, look really nice, go on, sneak on down there, wait till the man's had something to eat and drink and lies down, then lie down next to him and wait for him to tell her what to do. Now, this is insane. This is an insane idea, but I love Ruth's response. I will do whatever you say. Okay, great. Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her. So she gets all gussied up and she heads down there. And when Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, and he turned and discovered a woman lying at his feet. Okay, so note number one, women, you want to ask your husband something, make sure he's eaten and he's had something to drink, preferably a beer and a couple slices of pizza. Okay, he's full, he's had his beer, he's tired, now it's time to ask him something. It's a good time. Second thing is, I know why Naomi wanted Ruth to lay down at the feet of Boaz. There's a couple reasons. One is, men's feet are ticklish. At least, maybe she just looked forward in the time, and she knew that my feet are ticklish, and she assumed that Boaz's feet were ticklish. But what I'm thinking is, Naomi knew that men's feet are ticklish. The next thing she also knew is that when a man is woken up in the middle of the night by a strange person in his bed, he is going to be hypersensitive. Now, Keith and I, we both live in a community house. It's a 2,500 square foot home. It's got 9 people living in it, 2 families, 1 single person. And when there is a noise, like at 1 in the morning, and it's a startling noise, like maybe some shooting down the street or just a loud boom from somewhere, Keith and I are wake up, and we'll find each other out, you know, at least in the entryway going, right? Because we're so hyper alert, we're ready to kill anything. And trust me, if I wake up and there's a woman at the end of my bed at my feet, and she was a woman I didn't have in my bed in the beginning, I'll guarantee you I'm going to be awake or alert. Now, Boaz says, who are you? Guys, number one thing you should ask when you wake up in the middle of the night and there's a woman in your bed whom you didn't have in your bed when you went to sleep, you should ask, who are you? Identify the woman in your bed. Very important. Second thing, Ruth answers, I am your servant Ruth, she said. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are my kinsman redeemer. Let me just say, what Ruth is doing right now is Ruth is doing what we call a DTR. A DTR is define the relationship. Now let me just jump out of the text here for a moment and say this. I'm going to offend a few of you, but men and women, single men and women, cannot be friends. And when I say friends, what I mean by friendship is you can't spend a lot of time alone with each other and call it a friendship. And in our culture today, we call hanging out with each other, friends with benefits, we just say, oh, we're just friends. Yeah, oh, but you, and women suffer from this the most. And this is why women are always initiating define the relationship conversations, because what we have is we have guys who are like calling you at midnight, wanting to go out on walks, wanting to walk you home, wanting to take care of you, wanting to spend all this time with you. But then really when one of their guy friends says, oh, who's that girl you're always hanging out with? Are you guys going out? Oh, no, she's my friend. And then all of a sudden, this friend calls you up and says, hey, I want to meet you at 5:30 at the Raging Sage or at Starbucks, someplace that you've never been before. And she never called you and asked you at some odd time, like 5:30, to come talk to her in person. And you talk to her, and she sits down, and she says something to you like, I really like you, and we've been spending a lot of time, and I'm just kind of wondering what kind of relationship this is, because it's feeling like a dating relationship, but you ain't saying anything, so could you tell me? So the note to guys is get with it. If you're calling a girl and talking to her late at night, and you're going out to lunch and movies, and you find yourself with her alone a lot, like more than 2 times a year, then you've got more than a relationship, more than a friendship. You have a dating relationship, a courting relationship maybe even, and you had better get your behind off the ground and put some definition to this or end it. Ruth is forcing the issue with Boaz. Ruth is forcing the issue with Boaz. But she's, in her DTR, she's basically saying, dude, I like you. Would you ask me to marry you? It's probably your responsibility. Right? This is Boaz's response. The Lord bless you, my daughter, he replied. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. What is he referring to? Jump back to chapter 2, verse 11. This is what Boaz says to Ruth. Boaz replies, I have been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you have left your father and mother and your home and your land and have come to live with the people you did not know. That's the kindness before. He's saying, this kindness, this laying at the end of my feet, waking me up in the middle of the night, saying, hey, take care of me, marry me is more kind than that. You have not run after younger men, which, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a near kin, there is a kinsman, redeemer, nearer than I. I love this. So first thing he says, and this is typical when you get a DTR, this is what you get from a guy. Oh, it's a relationship. He didn't even think he was in the league of Ruth. Now, there could be 100 really good reasons for that. He's too old. He is already married. Though in this time, that's not an actual problem, him being married. Could be a lot of reasons. But he's shocked and realizes that this love that they most likely had, this connection, is one that she has, and he has it, and he's excited about it, and he's saying, bless you, bless you. But then, bam, so in that chick flick, here's the moment where we know, oh, they finally are in love. There's been this long time where we've been waiting for something to happen, and now it's happened in the story, and we're excited. There's a roadblock. And that roadblock is another kinsman. Meaning, maybe someone else will redeem her. And we're all going, no, that can't happen. Please, no, no, no. Stay here for the night. And oh, and by the way, I love what he says. He affirms to her, because we know, like from Hosea 9, that the prostitutes used to come down to the winnowing floor, and this was a time when there was lots of money and lots of drinking, and the women could take advantage of the men, or vice versa, the men could take advantage of the women. Whatever, it was a time when prostitutes come down, so coming down to the winnowing floor for this young woman was extremely risky, and it could be that she looked like a prostitute. And so what he's saying is, hey, everybody in the town knows you're noble. Look, I understand that you're not coming here to sleep with me. So stay right here. Stay right here for the night, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem, good, let him redeem. But if he is not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Lie here until the morning. So she lay at his feet until morning, but got up before anyone could be recognized, and he said, don't let it be known that a woman came from threshing floor, because you'd be thought as a prostitute. He also said, bring me the shawl you are wearing and hold it out. And when she did so, he poured in 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then he went back to town. I did a little research, and here's the deal. This is so typical guy. You find out a woman is in love with you, and you are in love with that woman. You don't think straight. And so the gifts that you give at the beginning of a relationship are really stupid and overboard. And so what he says is, here, honey, hold out your shawl, and I'll give you a man's load of barley. Not a woman's load, but a man's load. So here's Ruth is like, thank you, Boaz. Thank you. I'll have to come make it home. Right? Guys are just like this. I know we could stop right now, and you could tell us stories about women, about the gifts that your husbands gave you and are probably still giving you that are kind of weird and overboard. Especially the ones who are nuts about their wives. Yep. Anyway. So Ruth heads home. When Ruth came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, how did it go with my daughter? Then she told her everything Boaz had done for her and added, he gave me these 6 measures of barley, saying, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then Naomi said, wait, my daughter, until you find out what happened, the man will not rest until the matter is settled today. Okay, just a couple things. First off, I want to start out with what Naomi says about Boaz, because it's an indication, it's a look into the character of Boaz. She says he's going to deal with it right away. And here's what I was thinking as I've walked through this book or this chapter, and as I've been walking through this letter. This is about risk. This is a book constantly about risk. And you know what? You and I face risk at many different places in our lives. You know, risk is big and small. Risk could be simply stepping out of bed and facing life because you have a lot of overwhelming things you have to deal with, and maybe it's just better you stay in bed. Risk could be that your wife is, or husband is laying next to you in the dark and you need to talk to them about something, and opening your mouth is terrifying. Risk could simply be that you're trying to figure out who Jesus is and you're not sure, and you have this pull that feels like, I want to know Jesus, but I'm not sure, and the risk is to throw yourself at the feet of Jesus. It's a risk. Maybe it's your children. Your children are out of control and you don't know how to parent them, and a risk is to ask somebody for help. What I like about Ruth and about Boaz is that it shows that every step of the way in life, there's a risk. There's a decision that has to be made. And what I love about Ruth is that God is saying through Ruth that God's hand is involved with people who face the risks put in front of them, face the decisions that they have to face. And that God redeems the bad ones a lot of times, and God moves in his way and in his providence to provide help in our risky decisions. And what I love about Boaz is that he's a man of immediacy. I'm not going to let Ruth sit around and wait and wonder, is she going to be taken care of or not? I'm going to go deal with this. I'm going to force the issue with this other kinsman and make sure he takes responsibility for this woman, or I'm going to do it. And here's a risk for Boaz, because it may not work out for him, and he may not get Ruth, even though it seems that Ruth is choosing him. Boaz moves. The other thing that I realized as I looked at this passage is that Ruth doesn't have a father. I mean, Ruth's father is a Moabite, so he's probably not all that great anyway, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He's in another place, and Ruth is all by herself, and no smart, intelligent father is ever going to let his daughter walk down to a winnowing floor where she can be taken advantage of, thought of as a prostitute, simply to force the hand of a man to marry her. And as I thought about it, I realized that this church often draws a lot of young single women. And some of you, a lot of you, are in positions now and have been in positions where your fathers did not protect you and bad things happened to you. That you didn't have a dad step in your life and say no. You didn't have a dad who was moving towards you in your life. You didn't have a dad who developed a relationship with you where you trusted his advice and wanted his involvement. Fathers, when my daughter was just 2 years old, I started taking her out on dates. And at that time, at two, she insisted, with as much language as she had, to go to Wendy's. That's where she wanted to go on our dates. Since then, I say, where do you want to go on a date as long as it's not Wendy's? Because I just can't eat Wendy's anymore. But I remember when she was sitting there across from me, I would ask her questions about boys. I would ask her questions about life. I would tell her what I believed about life. I would say all of these things because I was practicing so that when she could talk. Because now she was just staring at me like, huh? Like, what do you mean, Dad? But she was loving every moment of it because she had me. And my daughter loves to go out on dates with me, and she dresses up, and she puts on her little bracelets, and she puts on her little hats and her little dress, and she talks about it all day, that she's going to go out on a date with Dad. Because I want to make it very difficult for young men to to marry my daughter. I don't want her marrying some floozy, some wimp. I want to set the bar high enough that the man who loves her, loves God, loves her as much as I do, more than I do, and is going to protect her. So, what I would like to ask you and put a challenge out here for you is, young women, if you think or feel, or it's just extremely obvious that you are uncovered, and what I mean by uncovered is, in Hebrew weddings, even up to now, and in Hindi weddings, this is true too, that during the wedding ceremony, there's a time when the groom covers the bride in a blanket or a shawl, and it symbolizes that he's welcoming her into his bed, but not only that, that he's covering her, he's protecting her. She's his. She belongs to him. There's a protection that's in that. And fathers are that until... That's what fathers are for young women. You're a protection. And so I'm going to challenge you, young women, to go out, and if you feel like you're in this place, look around this community, find some men who are either older in wisdom or older in age and wisdom, who you can say, hey, would you be my father? Would you ask into my life? Would you have coffee with me once every couple months and just find out how I'm doing? Find out what's going on with the men in my life. Find out who I'm dating. Ask me questions about my life with God. Talk to me about God. Teach me what you know about God. Fathers, older men, men of wisdom, expect these young women to ask you and tremble with fear and get on your hands and knees and ask God to give you wisdom. The last thing, the one thing I want to conclude with tonight that hit me as it came out of this message, as I was thinking about it, is that you and I are all in the place of Naomi and of Ruth. See, Naomi and Ruth are in a desperate, vulnerable situation. You and I, followers of Jesus and not followers of Jesus, are in a desperate situation because we're under the curse. We are sinners. And we are people who have nasty minds. We're people who look at pornography. We're women who manipulate men. We're liars. We're cheats. We're selfish. We're unkind. We use our words poorly. We have foul mouths. We don't honor our parents. We don't honor our teachers. We're disrespectful. We tear people's character down. We betray confidences. I am all of those things. You are all of those things. Now you say, no, Eric, maybe I don't fit in that list. Well, let me tell you that the Greek word for sin, is, which is all the New Testament is Greek, the Greek word is an archery term, and it means missing the mark, and that means that you and I, all we have to do, all of us should be able to admit that we've missed the mark. None of us are perfect. And Romans, the writer of Romans, Paul, as a letter to the Romans, says that the wages of sin is death. And that death is a death of your spirit and of your soul. And if you're not a follower of Jesus, you are dead. And this reminds me that in 2 weeks, Easter is coming. And Easter is the time that we celebrate that Jesus rose from the dead and that he was victorious over sin. And Hebrews tells us that that victory takes away the anxiety of sin. The writer of the Hebrew letter to the Hebrews is very simply says that that anxiety has been taken away. You and I no longer have to worry about what happens to us after we die, and we don't have to worry about ourselves now because God's grace covers us. And so the position that you and I are in now is to receive this gift of eternal life from Jesus, is to throw ourselves at the feet of Boaz. To throw ourselves at the feet of Jesus and ask to be covered and ask to be protected. And the reason that we celebrate Easter every year is that we are remembering that it is a lifetime process of throwing ourselves at the feet of God and asking to be covered. Not because we need to do it over and over again to be saved or something like that. But it's simply the realization that without Jesus, we cannot get it right. And so the invitation that I give you is throw yourself at the feet of the great and glorious Boaz. That's what Spurgeon calls Jesus. He's our great and glorious Boaz, our Redeemer, our kin. Philippians tells us that he became like a man. He became man. Jesus, God, became man, fully human, died on a cross, rose from the dead, offered you an escape from the penalty of sin and an option and an opportunity to live in the kingdom of God, to be a new person, to be one who's whole and alive and human, to come into a community of people who love each other and are trying to be more like Jesus and who are offering one another grace for our failure and appointing to Jesus' sacrifice on the cross and his victory from raising from the dead. We'll close with that. To Jesus, thank you so much for this community.